Hello and welcome to this update to the Fusion language. I will give you an insight of a part of the long marathon run from the language prototype that I've presented on last FOSDEM towards the full implementation and tool chain. This is some background on me. I have lots of experience in compilers and languages, but I don't go into details here, but dive directly into the motivation. Why do we do Fusion? Why a new language? And I see that many languages are more and more overloaded with concepts like classes, methods, interfaces, constructors, traits, records, and so on, while Fusion tries to simplify this significantly by providing only a single concept, that of a Fusion feature. Furthermore, today's compilers and tools are much more powerful, and they often make better decisions than the developer, so why not let them take over these decisions? And today's systems are often safety critical, so we need languages that ensure the correctness of our systems. Summary of the Fusion language, it's based on the Fusion feature as its main concept. It is statically typed. It is object-oriented, it has inheritance and redefinition. It typically uses value types, but it also supports dynamic reference types. It encourages immutability, and it tries to offload as many tasks and decisions from the developers to the tools as possible. Since last year, we have a Fusion logo now, so this is our language logo, and I think it shows quite nicely the concept of Fusion to unify different aspects of programming languages into one. And also, since last year, we have a new backing company to support the development of Fusion, which is Tokiwa Software GmbH. We currently have 3 employees, we are hiring, and we are also searching for long-term funding. An update on the Fusion language, a lot of work went into the syntax of the language to make it more clear and easier using white space. So the idea is to avoid things like semicolons or curly braces, parentheses, commas, wherever possible, and use white space instead to increase the clarity and readability and also to avoid errors. And I'll go into examples here. First, for semicolons, Fusion uses the concept of flat line feed. A flat line feed is a line feed that doesn't change the indentation level of a statement. And this, the parser takes this as equivalent to a semicolon, so we don't need a semicolon in this case. But it's still possible to put several statements into a single line, but now we need a separator between the statements, so there we can still use a semicolon. Next, blocks. Blocks typically formed using curly braces, but as an alternative, Fusion provides so-called indenting line feeds, which means if you have a new line that increases the indentation level, the parser treats this exactly as an opening curly brace, and if the indentation level goes back to the previous, that is treated as a closing curly brace, so we can get rid of the curly brace in our code as long as the indentation is as you would usually do it anyway. Nevertheless, you can still put several statements into a single line, but then you have to make sure that in this case for an if statement, there is a keyword then separating the condition from the statement that the parser knows where the statements would start. Next, calls. Calls classically use parentheses and commas to separate the arguments from the call function. Fusion is much more like Haskell here, where just spaces are used to separate the called feature name from the arguments and the arguments from one another. If you have nested calls, you still need parentheses though, like here's an example where feature F is called with the result of a call to G and a call to H, who themselves have arguments X, Y, and Z. And this nesting is equivalent to what you would write like this in a classic parentheses calling syntax. It might be, for somebody used to languages like Java, this might look very confusing in the beginning, but after you got used to that, this is actually a much clearer and easier to read syntax. And one difficulty with this calling syntax, though, is when using calls in conjunctions with tuples. So if you have a call with two arguments that could be read and written without spaces or with parentheses, if instead you have a call to a feature G and you pass a tuple consisting of A and B to that feature, we have almost the same syntax here. So the difference is just the space between the call feature name and the opening parentheses. And this syntax difference is actually semantically very significant in Fusion. In this case, we pass a tuple A and B as a single parameter to G, while in the case without a space in between, we call a feature with two arguments A and B. Next area is array accesses. Fusion, an array access is done with square brackets. And here's an example of accessing an array A, which is two-dimensional at indices I and J, which would be written like this. Also, Fusion has a syntax to create an array literal. In this case, here's an example to create an array consisting of the elements X, Y, and Z. You write it like this. Now, if you pass such an array to a feature F, you would write this like this, F, and then separate with a space. The argument is the array of X, Y, and Z. And here again, we have a significant difference made just by the space after the name of the call feature. If it is there, it's an array that we pass as an argument, while if it's not there, it is an index call using square braces. Operators are another interesting area. If we have a call and we pass minus x as an argument, we can write this like that, and this is equivalent like if the minus x would be put in parentheses. So the minus has precedence over the call if it sticks directly to the argument. But in contrast to that, if you have a separation with spaces between the operators and the argument, this is parsed as an infix operator. So f space minus x is the same as subtract x from f. If by contrast we have f minus space x, this is parsed as a postfix operator operating on f, and the result used as the target of a call to x. So in this case, f minus has to return a feature that can be called, and that will be called then given the argument x. Next, infix operators. Also, we can pass an expression I minus b to a call feature f. And if there's no spaces, then the value of a minus b is passed as the argument to feature f. While if we put a space behind a, these are parsed as two different arguments. So f is called with two arguments, a and minus b. However, if we completely separate the operator from both arguments, then the binding of the call f to the argument is stronger than the binding of the operator. So this will be parsed as f applied to a single argument a and b being subtracted from the result. So the important thing is that the binding of a call is stronger than an operator that is separated by white space, while an operator that is not separated by white space binds stronger than a call. For those who might be surprised and shocked by the rigorous use of white space for semantics here, please be aware that also other languages like Java, where it's not so obvious, you have important semantic changes depending on addition of white space, which is shown with a small example here, where introduction of a single white space completely changes the semantics. Next area I'd like to represent is type inference. Type inference is used to avoid the need to write explicit types in source code. Type inference occurs in Fusion whenever values are assigned to fields, to features. This could be in an explicit assignment, like here an expression is assigned to a field X, or the result of a feature, like here GA is the result of the feature call F, that is assigned to the feature result. And here in the third example, we have a literal that is assigned to the argument field of the called feature H. During type inference, types actually propagate in two directions, two possible directions. One would be from the expression to whatever they are assigned to, but the other way could also occur where the target of an assignment propagates its type to the expression that is assigned to the target. And I bring examples of that shortly. So here is a few examples of forward propagation, where a literal constant 123 is assigned to a field V, and the type of that field is just the default type for integer constants, which is I32 in Fusion. Same for the next, where a string constant of type string is assigned to a new field S, and the type of S is inferred from the constant, so it is a string. Next example shows where the result type of a feature H is inferred from the expression that is returned as a result. So in this case, the type U8 of V is also the result type of V shifted to the right. So the result of this feature is U8. And this can also occur with more complex types, like here we create an instance of point with two parameters 0 and 0, which is of type point I32, and that is the result type of this origin feature. Type inference is also used for type arguments, so the actual type arguments in a call are propagated from the arguments given to the actual call. So we have an example here where a feature square that has a type argument T that squares a value of an arbitrary integer type. This square function can be called either with an explicit type parameter, where here we have square of I32 values called on 123. But this type argument can also be inferred automatically, so we can leave it out since I32 is the default type of integer literals. So we can skip this. Very important for the convenience of the developer is type propagation for lambdas. And for lambdas, now the type propagation goes the other way around. So from the target of the assignment, types are propagated to a lambda expression. So we have an example here of two features, SI and II. First receives a function argument that takes a string and an integer and produces a string, while the second takes two integers and produces an integer. And if we call both of these features, giving the same, syntactically the same expression, the types are propagated from the target, from what is called, towards this lambda expression. So in this first case, the type would be string and i32 to string. So this will repeat the string I times, while the second version will have just integer types. So this will perform an integer multiplication. Another example for backpatch type propagation are numeric literals. So if we assign an integer constant to a field with an explicit type, in this case, unsigned 16 bits, then the type of that field gets propagated to the literal, and the literal has the type unsigned 16-bit value. This also works if the literal value actually looks like a float, but as long as it is representable as the target type, the type of even this float-looking constant is unsigned 16-bit. And one specific case that looks a bit like a cast, but it's actually the same thing, is if we call U16 here and pass as an argument the constant, the feature U16 actually expects an argument which is exactly of the same type, which is unsigned 16. So here the type gets propagated from the argument from U16, which is U16, to the constant. So we also have a literal of type U16 in this case, and a fairly nice syntax to produce constants of a particular type. The same holds if we use floating point 64 values for this. We can declare a field of that type, and in this case, this constant will be a floating point value, also when we use the standard floating point syntax, but also if we use the floating point call for F64, call for this constant. So next, I want to give you an overview over the Fusion toolchain and the current state of the development here. The toolchain starts with Fusion source code files, and a front end processes these source code files to produce Fusion module files. And these module files are then taken as an input by a middle end to produce a Fusion application file. And this application file, oops, I have to move out of the way now that you can see this. This application file is then taken by an optimizer to create an intermediate representation, FUIR, which is then taken as the input by different backends to produce something like binary code or JAR files or whatever can be executed on your system. Now, this is the planned design. The actual implementation that was presented at FOSDEM last year takes a lot of shortcuts. There was basically an interpreter that runs on top of a JVM, and data from the front end, like the abstract syntax tree and so on, was forwarded and used directly in the interpreter. There was a basic middle end, but also direct accesses to the abstract syntax tree. And starting from this date from 1 year ago, what has been done meanwhile is that a simple form of the optimizer has been developed that provides, not as a file but as an interface, the intermediate representation. And this interface was then used to implement a C backend that creates binary code through the LLVM C compiler. And here, at least for the C backend, we have a very nice and clean separation from the backend and the front end. It all goes through this FUIR interface here. Then the module file definition has been done. It is not finished yet, but at least for the base library, we can create a pre-compiled module file that is then used by the middle end. And I will go back to my original position. I would like to present to you the format of these module files quickly. It's a binary file format, so it looks something like this, but I don't want to go into the details of the bits in here, but I want to explain you the main purpose. It's a binary format such that it can be fmapped directly to memory, that the tools can very quickly load and access these files without any parsing or pre-processing. Module files use offsets to reference one another, not names. So lookup is very fast, very direct. And module files contain basically the feature declarations from that module, the types that are used by those features, expressions that contain the code that is executed, and also they contain a copy of the source code. And features in module files come in 5 different variants. There can be routines, that is features that have code, fields, which is features that can store a value. There can be intrinsics, that is features that the backend has to implement, abstract features that don't have an implementation, and choice features that provide a union type. And the types come in 2 flavors, either in feature types, which is features plus possible type arguments, and pure type parameter types. And the expressions currently only have 10 different kinds, and these are things like a call or a match or a constant, an assignment or a pop. So it's a stack-based machine, but with a very limited number of expressions to make the tools at the backend simpler. The impact of using these module files is, first, we have a much faster compilation because we can use the pre-compiled modules, and we have a unit for module-based correctness analysis. We have a unit to define visibility, so we can have features that are local to a module and features that are exported and visible to other modules. And we can use modules as containers to exchange library code. Other tools, there is a new tool, FZJava, that takes Java modules and converts them into Fusion source files that we can call Java code directly from Fusion. We have implemented a Fusion language server such that IDEs and editors have Fusion language support like auto-completion, signature help, documentation helps, and so on. We have a Fusion doc tool, and the result of that you can see on the Flang website that extracts documentation from the standard library and makes it easily browsable. So, the next step for Fusion is there should be more support for the intermediate files. The module files are only partly supported at the moment. Application and FUIR files still need to be supported. We want to have simple analysis tools working on top of these module files to check things like field initialization or immutability. The C backend still needs a garbage collector, so we can't really use this for longer running application. It doesn't support floats yet, and also there's no counterpart yet to the FZJava tool to interface C library code, so that is urgently needed to interface with other code. We need a lot of work on the standard library, and related to that We need to have a decision how to model I/O and threat communication in the context of immutability. One idea that is presented in the design section on flame.dev is the use of automatic monadic lifting, but we still have to put a lot of thought into that, how to best do that. So, coming to the end, we are running really a whole marathon here in the implementation of this language and tools, but as a marathon runner, I know we have not made the first 10 kilometers yet, and so it's long before the real pain starts. We really need to grow our team, we need to get developers on board and get their feedback, and also we need to secure long-term funding for the project. So please get involved. You find the links here to get information, to get contact me, or to get the source code. And for those who have seen last year's call in this dev room, you probably wonder what happened to Ellie. Ellie actually started her professional life as an assistant dog, and she's happily helping her new owner. Thank you. Goodbye. Hi. I have 2 minutes to quickly react to your questions. Thank you first for your interest and for all the questions you posed. So first, HisHamHM asks, when you say equivalent to, does this mean the other syntax is still accepted? Talking about the syntax using parentheses or spaces to separate arguments and curly braces. And they are both accepted at the moment, and I think I will keep that. And I see that many potential users of such a language, in particular with a Java or C background, are really reluctant to switch over to a space and indentation-based schema. So I don't want to put any extra barriers to those to switching over to such a language. And I would like to actually best to have tools to automatically convert source code between the two representations, just to mute any arguments that say that there's too much semantics in the white space. Then the next question, did you find it difficult to avoid generating C code that exhibits undefined behavior? Not really, but I was working on C backends for a long time. So I'm kind of automatically avoiding those. Next question from Troels Henriksen. The flat line field rule reminds him of the Haskell's offside rule. I actually don't have much experience with Haskell. I haven't really used that. So it's quite likely that they use something very similar for replacing curly braces like what I did in Fusion. Okay, my time is up. Please contact me directly. Bye-bye.